This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, colleague, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey there. We're now reporting in from day 493 of the quarantine.
Of the quarantine? Yeah, I think so.
Roughly.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I'll say this, though. Last week seemed harder to me. Maybe I'm just getting into the routine now. I feel a little more settled in this week. I've had some mood swings, yeah, but what about you? Is it getting harder or easier, do you think?
It's getting harder, but it goes back and forth. Like, I mean, most, like, during the day and stuff, it's not that big a deal. But, mm-hmm. like, once in a while, you're like, okay, now I'm done with this. Let's do something new. And, of course, you can. Although, so for the first time in a while, this weekend, I tried to go somewhere to hike and fish that I've been in the past. And okay. It's never been crowded ever. And oh, I was God. Like, you know what? It's a mild risk. It's always just me there anyway. Mm-hmm. I need to get out of here. So I go. And it was so incredibly crowded. It was insane.
Oh, that sucks.
I know. I had to leave. But like, it was, I'm like, why the hell am I quarantining? No one else is, clearly. Apparently, I'm the only one in the universe who's gotten the message here. So,
well, I mean, if no one else is, that's more reason for you to stay quarantined. Those crazy people.
Yeah, it was crazy. I hadn't been like that far. It wasn't even that far. But I hadn't actually left home base, so to speak, in a while. And it was just so weird to see the world going on as normal out there.
What time did you go?
It was afternoon, so it was more, I just had never seen it crowded there before, so just surprised that it was now. I guess everyone else felt the same way.
Exactly, yeah. They're like, what's that out of place way we can go and get some fresh air? But yeah, you know, one thing I realized is, you know, young guns like you, who probably had social lives before all this stuff happened.
You're being generous, but kind.
Are suffering more than me. You know, people going out for drinks and this. Like, you know, that didn't happen during a weekday school day anyway. Like, so Monday through Fridays, we were just pretty much home anyways, especially in the evenings. Weekends is where we feel the impact more because it's just you and the family. We actually did. We wanted to, my eldest daughter, and you know, she's like 22, and her friends, she's told me, have been getting together here and there. She's like, oh, they're maintaining a distance. I'm like, that's bullshit. And no, you, if you're going to go, you ain't coming back home. Simple as that. You can go stay in a hotel or something. Because I've got my parents to think about. They're elderly. So anyhow, we went to Great Falls, but we didn't get there till about 4 or 5, and it was pretty empty then.
Oh.
So yeah, so we waited. We didn't wait on purpose, but we just ended up going there that late. But we also this weekend started to dig a garden in But when we actually sat down and thought about like what are we gonna grow, there's like only three things we want, so we're putting in a lot of effort.
If you need extra plants, my nursery definitely has more that can fit in my garden. So.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what kind of doorstep?
Do you have like fruits and vegetables or like what?
Yeah,
are you,
I got a bunch of melons, some luthas,
some
tomatillos, tons of random stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah, we'll take them. I might kill them, Susan.
That's okay. I got enough to spare.
All right. Sounds good. Okay.
As long as I'm not killing them, I feel like I've done my duty. I put them out in the wild. Whatever happens, happens.
Look, I got a compost bin. Like we're trying to really do this, like for real. So let's see how it goes. We have some time to figure it out, but none of us know how to garden. So this will be fun. All right. So there's some news today. We have a Democratic nominee. I thought we'd start there because that's news right now. Trump will be going up against Biden this November if we have elections, that is.
We'll have elections. Whether they are real and count is another matter, but.
Okay. Yeah, I did read an article the other day that Trump might want to postpone election, but he actually can't. I mean, this is like by law, like there's just no constitutional way around it. Like Congress, both houses of Congress would have to pass another law. It's just, it can't happen. But what that'll look like, we'll see. So I hope sooner rather than later. Yeah, so Bernie conceded this morning, sooner rather than later, hopefully. I have no idea. So yesterday was a primary in Wisconsin. What are the states? It was a mess.
It was a preview of what to expect in 2020. Wisconsin is a demoralizing example because in the end, SCOTUS was SCOTUS. It was 5-4. And the anti-voting majority on the Supreme Court won, which in turn helps Republicans. In general, as a general rule, anything that makes voting more accessible harms Republicans. So that is how that's going to play out for...
Oh, and Trump knows it because he tweeted about it this morning.
Yes.
He tweeted about, he's against, Republicans are against voter, like mail-in voting, except that Trump mailed in his vote with the Florida absentee ballot. And he was asked about it at one of these crazy ass briefings we'll talk about in a bit. And he was like, oh, but I'm allowed to. So, but he did tweet about it. He's like, you know, for some reason, oh, Republicans seem to do worse.
His tweet this morning was, Republicans should fight very hard when it comes to statewide mail-in voting. Democrats are clamoring for it. Tremendous potential for voter fraud. And for whatever reason, doesn't work out well for Republicans. For whatever reason. Just like putting it out there, like, oh, I don't want it because, well, one, fraud, which is just totally bogus. Everyone knows that. And two, it's like, and also because Republicans don't do well with it. Like, meh.
Yeah.
We can't have it because it's bad for Republicans. Nothing else matters.
He always says the quiet part out loud. So he just, we already knew that's why.
Yeah. He doesn't get it's the quiet part.
He doesn't understand it.
But all like, right. We need nationwide mail-in voting. It is the only way to have anything approaching a fair election coming in November. And you know what? I'd be fine. I mean, I wouldn't be fine with it, but I would deal with it if they made it so it was a one-off and it was somehow written in that, like, this year and this year alone, we have nationwide mail-in voting. And if they don't want to carry it on to other years, well, whatever, fine. We can fight that fight another time. But it's so vital for this election that whatever, like, however it's done, it has to be done.
Well, do you think it has to be done because we're still going to be dealing with the fallout of the virus or what?
Yes, we will be. And especially if this is a seasonal thing, which it likely is, November is right when it's going to start surging again. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that now. Well, there's plenty to talk about that. Where are we today in terms of CDC numbers, cases reported and deaths in the United States?
I think we just crossed over the 400,000 mark of confirmed cases, mm-hmm. and deaths are like 13,000.
Yeah. Okay. So I noticed that you said that you want to talk about goalposts moving for this administration and the talking points as the numbers climb. What are we seeing now? Like, what's the messaging now about this?
2 weeks ago, we had a series of bizarre briefings from the White House where Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx especially were crazy optimistic and upbeat in their presentations.
Right, we talked about that last week.
Yeah. They were just so, like, not even wanting to talk about the current wave of infections because, like, oh, it's all dealt with, it's fine. And then a week ago, they just turned on a dime and suddenly it became, like, the direst of the dire. They were like, well, projections, the models, which previously Birx had been so dismissive of and so derogatory about. She's like, well, these models are robust and they show that we'll expect 100,000 to 240,000 die, which super alarming, especially after they're suddenly just changing course entirely. But even the problem was those models that they were relying on were never made public. They were never released, and it's still not clear what actually informed those models. Now, there were models that were in that range, but whichever one the White House was using to make this projection, as far as I know, they never made it public.
Okay.
Then, surprise, surprise, this morning we have statements from Dr. Fauci saying, quote, although one of the original models projected 100,000 to 200,000 deaths, as we are getting more data and seeing the positive effect of mitigation, those numbers are going to be downgraded. Right now, it looks like it's going to be less than the original projection. Yeah. So I think there's a really good chance that last week's, you know, worst case scenario numbers, last week's projection numbers were in fact worst case scenario intentional overcounts in order to give Trump some kind of relative win here.
I mean, the thing though is Trump would claim a victory no matter what happens. I mean, you know, if the numbers are low, he's going to say it's because of all the different, and I mean, how many times they brought up the ban of, you know, flights from China, whereas this week there was reporting that in fact we had 40,000 visitors, people enter from China since after that quote ban, which wasn't really exactly a ban. But no matter what happens, he's going to count it as a win anyways. Even if he were to hit 100,000, he'd say, well, it's way less than 240,000.
This is true, but this helps him too. Like, in terms of messaging, it is easier to tell those lies when you've reset the goalpost as over 100,000, which I bet there's a good chance they expected models to show around 70, 80 total, maybe. And that would explain why they, one, had quick reversal to, like, the direst predictions, and then a week later, like, oh, actually, you know what, we're almost done with the worst of it and we're gonna have way under.
It's so irresponsible of these seasoned veteran, like, infectious disease experts and physicians, Fauci and Birx. I don't understand You're going to terrify Americans. You're going to terrify Americans when you say 240,000 deaths.
So, okay, yes, but terrifying Americans was actually probably for the good of the nation at that point because it had been so underplayed. I think
that's interesting.
I would have much, I have much, much more criticism for their extreme nonchalance about it before than I do for them possibly intentionally making the, like, we Americans needed to be more scared than they were. So to that end, whatever. I don't have a problem with them using the models that were in existence to give a, you know, a worst case projection, even they're presenting it as like they're expected. But the whole administration has dealt with this whole pandemic is just such an image game and not about actually, and not about getting the best outcome overall. And of course they've moved on now, especially on Fox, to their new theory that the deaths are overcounted, that the COVID-19 fatalities are a fraud and intended to make Trump look bad because they're counting people, how do they put it? They're counting people with COVID-19 as COVID-19 deaths.
But who died from somebody, something else.
Or just would have died anyway, like a year or two later. They're like, oh, just because you died with COVID doesn't mean you died from COVID. I mean, sure, if someone got hit by a car while they're infected with it, then they should not be included. However, if someone has a pre-existing condition that is exacerbated and because of COVID they die, that is a COVID fatality.
I'm guessing people who died because of COVID, it's on there. Like, that's the cause of death. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's like respiratory failure or something.
That's how they're counting it. The problem is, of course, there's lots of deaths that are unintended and have been untested.
Sure.
And people are dying at home without a COVID diagnosis. And at least right now, those numbers are not being included in the final counts, although hopefully and presumably they will be at some later date once we're through the chaos. I'm not going to lie. The number of days I've worn a bra in the past month or so is definitely like an all-time low for me. I'd say my average is way under. Yeah, yeah. Like, since middle school, it's probably the lowest average I've ever had for terms of like bra wearing days.
Well, look, I don't have a choice. I got to wear a bra because if I don't wear a bra, like, yeah.
It's
not going to be pretty.
One day life will return to normal and some days you need a bra anyway. And that's why you should go to Third Love to make sure that you're ready for when it's time to return to the sunshine.
You know what? I got the loungy bra that you love.
Oh my God, you love it? Wonderful. I love it so much.
Yes, yes, I feel loungy. Like I said, unlike some ladies who I consider very lucky, I cannot go without a bra. I gotta have a bra on all the time. I even terribly, tragically sometimes sleep in one. But that's what happens when you breastfed three kids. You need a bra.
Yeah, the loungy bra is now my fancy bra. That's how I know I'm having a really fancy day.
Well, if you're like me, it took me years to figure out what my right size was, but the Fit Finder quiz that Third Love has is fantastic. You can just take it online. So look, if you're stuck home, this is the perfect time to do all this. Figure out what size your bra is. You can go take the quiz online. 15 million women have taken it. They use the data not just to help you figure out what your size is, but also it helps them create bras. They've used all this data from millions of women to create incredibly fitting bras.
And they are hands down the most comfortable bras you'll ever own. They have straps that won't slip and tagless labels, so no itching.
Love that.
And lightweight, super thin memory foam cups that mold your shape.
And one day I'm going to care that I'm wearing a pretty bra, just not right now. The beautiful design.
One day.
One day. All right, look, Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everybody, and right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. And Susan, can I say there's nobody else I'd rather be talking about babies with. Thank you.
Same,
thank
Rabia. You for doing this.
There's also still a lot of pressure on him from some Fox personalities to just open back. I guess this is part of it, is to open up the economy again. Just today, I think Laura Ingraham tweeted, you know, Trump needs to just turn to Fauci and Birx and say, listen, one way or the other, we're opening up May 1st. All the protocols will be lifted. Economy's back. Work is back. You just give us what guidance do we need to do this? But we just got to make this happen.
That's not how reality works, unfortunately.
Yeah. So.
So theoretically, we are right now this week, we could call this you know, the top of the peak. This could be, and this hopefully is, the worst of the worst that we're going to see.
Do you really think so? Because over and over, I've been reading that for weeks now, that the peak was going to come like May, June.
It's going to change jurisdiction by jurisdiction. Like, it's not going to be the same everywhere. But this could overall the worst, because we're hoping, what that is assuming and hoping is that New York is the worst outcome, and that their peak is right now, which does seem likely based on the data.
It seems like California has California sort of flattened out or something. I'm reading reports that they're sending ventilators to other states or to the stockpile. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, this is not like a, oh, once you get through this goal, you're done. It's not a case of like, okay, we're through the worst of it, so now it's always down.
Nobody else dies. Right.
No, like you can have more peaks. That's the whole point. It's like, just because this is the worst and we want to keep it the worst does not mean it will be the worst. And if they just relax everything and go back to normal, we'll have new peaks all over the place and they can be worse than this one.
Right. I mean, it's a matter of how long can you get people to just stay home? The longer we can do that, the better the result. Simple as that.
And the more testing we get, the more we can be efficient in how we target the lockdowns and how we approach this. It does not need to be everyone in their house always from now until whenever we get a vaccine. But there will be some restrictions necessary everywhere until we get the vaccine.
I spoke to one of my best friends. She lives in Sri Lanka. She's from Sri Lanka. And, you know, it's a tiny little country. It's an island. And so they've been very effective in containing this from very early on. They put a curfew in place. And you can, again, do that with a country like Sri Lanka that's experienced many military curfews anyways. It's a whole different situation here. And the way they've been opening it back up is actually kind of like that. They'll lift the curfew from a region for a number, like a few days. Then they'll just, and then it'll go back on curfew. This was like about a week ago, and it'll open up. So different parts of the country are getting a chance to, you know, get what they need, get the supplies. But overall, there is still, they're like, you know, because they're like, they don't have the resources that like a larger, richer country might have. They have to control that. They certainly would be overwhelmed if it spread. And I think at the time they had maybe one death, which was a week ago, which is incredible. So, but yeah, I mean, if it was a very controlled way to kind of lift, you know, the stay-at-home orders, and I kind of want to talk about that because right now we have 41 states that have issued stay-at-home orders from the governors. There are 9 governors who have not done it. There's 4 states where there's absolutely no stay-at-home order, and that's North Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Arkansas. In 4 other states, Utah, Wyoming, South Carolina, Oklahoma, governors have not issued stay-at-home orders, but some local municipalities and mayors and leaders have. But there are still some holdouts, and I think what's common among the holdouts is that they're all Republican governors.
And lower density, to be fair.
Lower density. Yeah. They're spread out a bit, so.
And what we've seen, though, is that this COVID's a terrible, like, it was not designed. I want to clarify that. It's absolutely not designed. It's natural. It came from animals. But the way it is played out for humans, it's almost like it was designed to perfectly take advantage of our society and how we're structured and how we operate. But it's not perfect. It is actually, if you have the right system in place, you can have a few infections and it will stay at a few infections. It is not a case that will automatically overwhelm your system wherever it goes.
It's defeatable.
It is defeatable. It can be with certain, you know, strict but not draconian measures, you can keep infections from hitting that exponential growth curve. Lots of cities in the U.S. have shown that they can do that. Like Washington State and San Francisco, they've all succeeded in showing that they can stop what happened in New York from happening. And if New York had done a lockdown a week earlier, they probably wouldn't have, Jesus, they might have a quarter of what they're saying now.
Right.
Every day matters once you start getting that, climbing up that curve.
I mean, I even a few days ago, though, Susan, I saw like video footage of New Yorkers like in subways, all crowded, I mean, with masks on, but all crowded up against each other. I don't understand. I don't really know what the rules are right there in the city right now, but something doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, and the data is, I don't know. I think it is likely we're in the worst of it, and I hope that is true for New York.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to get worse from here. They can't handle worse from here.
All right. So you mentioned earlier that the numbers are going to depend on a lot of different things, but testing is one of them. But I wanted to talk about, you know, what we know about right now with testing, supplies, where the state of that is. There has been earlier this week a report by the Inspector General of Health and Human Services that did not paint a pretty picture. They surveyed or spoke to like 323 hospitals, said there are severe shortages, said that there was equipment they had gotten from the national stockpile that was rotten. And then what happened was when asked about this 2 days ago in one of the daily briefings that they are giving now, Trump went on attack mode. He said, I don't agree. I do not agree with this report. And then he wanted to know who was this who's this inspector general? I thought we could take a listen to this exchange and then talk about it.
Ugh, fine, I'll do it again. It was hard enough the first time.
Yeah. the nearly 1.8 million tests that you say the United States has done, the Inspector General for the Department of Health and Human Services released a report today, a survey of more than 300 hospitals across the country. And the number one complaint from those hospitals were severe shortages of testing supplies and long wait time. I mean, it's a week wrong. Or longer. And
did I hear the word Inspector General? Really? It's wrong. And they'll talk to you about it. It's wrong.
But this is your own government.
Well, where did he come from, the Inspector General? What's his name?
It came from the Inspector General.
No, what's his name?
I don't know his name.
Well, find me his name. Let me know, okay? If you find me his name, I'd appreciate it.
But, sir, these are hospitals.
All I can follow up on this question of the HHS Inspector General, and by the way, her name was Christy Grimm, and it wasn't so much her opinion, but they interviewed 323 different hospitals.
Well, it still could be her opinion. When was she appointed?
I'm not sure when she was appointed.
Would you do me a favor? Let me know.
I'll check.
No, let me know now. I have to know now, John. Let me know now. Because we are doing an incredible job in testing. We are doing a better job than anybody in the world right now in testing. There's nobody close. And other nations admit this. Other nations have admitted it very strongly. Other nations are calling us, wanting to know about our testing. Let me know when she was appointed, would you?
Specifically,
ahead,
what
please.
She was saying was that there had been a delay in the
Okay, thank you very much. How long has that person been in government?
Did serve in the previous administration.
Oh, you didn't tell me that. Oh, I see. You didn't tell me that, John. You didn't tell me that. Did serve in the previous administration. You mean the Obama administration. Thank you for telling me that. See, there's a typical fake news deal.
I told you when she was appointed.
You're a third-rate reporter, and what you just said is a disgrace, okay? You asked me, you said, sir, just got appointed. Take a look at what you said. Now, I said, when did this person, how long in government? Well, it was appointed in the Obama administration. Thank you very much, John.
Sir.
Thank you very much. You will never make it.
Yeah, so Trump, we'll get more into this later, but Trump's current war is not just or even primarily on the virus, it's also on inspector generals across the federal government, including now this deputy at the Health Human Services Agency, because basically reality doesn't matter to Trump. And he's just going to deny the obvious, which is that we had severe widespread shortages across the nation.
Well, he also attacks this poor journalist, calls him, he's like, you're never going to make it. The guy's a White House reporter. I mean, like, I think he's like that ship was out. He attacks a reporter. He wants to know who this person is. He said he's going to look into her. By the way, this Inspector General, she did serve in the Obama administration, but she has been a civil servant for way before the Obama administration. I think since 1999. There you go. I don't think she's been fired yet. I think it's probably coming.
But of course, like at the briefing, he's like, oh, when was she appointed? And when someone's like, yeah, she's been there for years, he's like, oh, huh? And you try to put this fast one over me by suggesting that a real IG criticized me, real meeting, i.e., when he appointed.
Paranoia is crazy in these briefings. I mean, I can't even imagine. Think about this: if what we're seeing is him in a suit contained, imagine him what he's like behind the scenes.
I think he's probably not that different.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he's got to be so much worse. Because I know people. Look,
he's definitely worse in some ways. I don't think it's like order of magnitude different. I think Trump is Trump.
God, Susan. Maybe, but you might be right. But I know somebody who has a very similar personality to Trump, whether it's a disorder or whatever. And this person, man, publicly, even publicly, there's times when she cannot keep a hold of herself, but it never gets as bad as this. Privately, she's bad.
With regard to this report, now, it is true that it was based on data from past weeks. In fact, the survey they did was between March 23rd and 27th. And it shows then that there was widespread shortages, you know, across the nation for all kinds of equipment, PPE and testing. Since then, thankfully, things have improved somewhat. There's still ongoing shortages of materials, but the testing is steadily improving. I mean, it's weeks behind where it should be, and it's still not yet where it ought to be, but it has been a steady progression this whole time. So that was part of the defense that others in the administration came up with at the briefing. They're like, oh, this is old, out of date. Now everything's perfect. Well, okay, one, it's not. But two, that doesn't mean there weren't shortages. What Trump is claiming, and what he's objecting to, is that there was ever a problem. He's trying to rewrite history to say, oh, everything was always fine, despite us all living through the weeks when everything was so clearly not fine.
So the briefings had, I've actually this week, some weeks we don't have any audio. This week there's just so much audio to choose from. We have a number of different times. I mean, like it's been crazy. Okay, so we know he's been bragging about ratings. This is how he substitutes for his rallies that he used to do. This morning he tweeted that, you know, the Democrats hate that I'm doing daily briefings because they know my ratings are so high. Again, what he referred to, I think, The Apprentice and other, The Bachelor. I don't even know what he's comparing his ratings to, but he made a sex joke this week at one of the briefings. He was talking about, and the thing is, like, what's shocking is, like, you've got tens of thousands of dead Americans. And even in a time like this, you can't have enough sobriety. You're talking about models of how many more people are going to get sick and how many more people are going to die. And he turns that into a joke about,
I don't do models. I do models. You know what I mean? Oh, right. My God.
He's so
He's just a foul, incompetent human being. And his followers only care, primarily, end of the day, all they care about is they have someone that vindicates.
Dude, what do they care about?
That someone is in charge who vindicates them, who makes them feel better for having suffered of having Obama in office for 8 years. They want to inflict the pain they felt in everyone else. And this is how they do it. So everything else, that, you know, is outweighed by that need to have the guy who
the pain
does
of
awful things,
like healthcare and an economy and a job. That pain, that was, I mean, I don't know what I don't know.
They want to gloat, and he's good at gloating on their behalf, and they can live vicariously through that. Is what it comes down to.
Well, another function these briefings have served is to promote again. We've heard this over and over and over again. This, you know, the drug combination that Trump believes is a miracle.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Thank you so much. Hydroxychloroquine and a Z-Pak, which is like,
antibiotic.
Antibiotics, right. So a number of times he's brought this up in briefings. Apparently this past weekend, he showed up in the Situation Room as the pandemic task force was meeting. And he said, listen, I want to talk about these medicines again. They were like, listen, don't oversell this drug because we don't know if it's a safe remedy because of heart patients. And Trump responds, oh, yeah, the heart stuff. Then he goes out and he talks about it again. And not only does he talk about it, but he kind of does his, so what do you have to lose? I would use it. And then when a reporter's like, listen, I want to ask a doctor what a doctor thinks, he cuts Fauci off.
Why not just let the science speak for itself? Why are you promoting this drug?
I'm not. I'm just saying, very simply, I'm not at all. I'm not. Look, you know what I'm trying to do?
You come out here every day, right, sir, talking about the benefits of
hydroxychloroquine. I want them to try it, and it may work and it may not work. But if it doesn't work, it's nothing lost by doing it, nothing. We don't have time to go and say, gee, let's take a couple of years and test it out, and let's go and test with the test tubes and the laboratories. We don't have time. I'd love to do that. But we have people dying today. As we speak, there are people dying. We bought massive amounts of it, 29 million doses of it. We have it coming from all of the labs. We're actually now doing it here because in case it does work, we want to have it.
And would you also weigh in on this issue of hydroxychloroquine? What do you think about this, and what is the medical evidence?
Answer that question?
Yeah.
Well, maybe 15,
the doctor.
15 times. You don't have to ask.
He's your medical expert, correct?
He's answered that question 15 times.
Dr. Fauci, why are you not wearing a face mask?
Susan, what is going on here? There have been some theories of that. Maybe he has a financial stake in this, but there doesn't seem to be evidence that it's like a large enough financial stake that would matter.
So one, he does have a financial stake in it, and that is improper all by itself. There's no like threshold for when it's improper.
Sure, right.
Two, no, I don't think that is what's motivating him. Trump is motivated by the need for a miracle cure and for a need to prove that he was right about something or anything. And he'll never be proven wrong because he'll insist he was right to the end of time. And three, just because Trump doesn't have financial stakes in this doesn't mean others don't. And I swear to God, I'd bet a lot of money that Giuliani has some deal with some distributor of the drug.
Right, because Giuliani was on Fox again talking about the drug, too.
He's been on Twitter and his podcast, quote-unquote, aka YouTube channel, talking up hydroxychloroquine with, like, a host of just grifters. And it's not that I'm saying that Giuliani is too smart to fall for this, but also he's more into the grift. He wouldn't be doing this just because of some. He's not doing this because he believes in it. He's doing it because either it's because he wants to support Trump on this chaotic quest, or more likely he's got some kind of skin in the game.
Oh, he has, because you know what? He has emerged from whatever hibernation he's been in for a little bit. I haven't seen him in a while, and suddenly the ghoul is back. Just to promote this, I feel like that's the only thing I've seen him talk about. So, I mean, there are some reports about, so Trump has ordered millions of doses of this. In fact, from India, and India was going to stop exporting it because I think India was thinking about using it. And then Trump got on the call with Modi and was like, and Modi's like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and send it to them. But Novartis is one of the companies that we know has already been involved in some shady shit with Cohen and Trump. And they're one of the manufacturers. So yeah, there's all kinds of interest, but it's a weird thing that he keeps pushing over and over very specifically.
At this point, it's like Alabama though. It's just because he's doubled down, he has to be right, and he can't be wrong.
Yeah.
So he's gonna sharpie in the reports to say, oh, it's a miracle cure, whatever the actual results are.
So temperatures have been really weird lately. It's like freezing one day and it's really warm the next day. And I'm stuck in a house with a whole lot of people and we all regulate differently. So let me tell you, I am so thankful for the Ember Wave in these weird temperature times.
Yeah, when it's wake up and it's like cold out, you put on heavy socks and a sweatshirt. And then by noon, you're like, holy cow, I'm dying of heat.
Right. So the Ember Wave, for folks who don't know, it's the first bracelet that actually helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. So it's
or like this anklet, if you're Rabia.
Or right, because my feet are cold. and I have used it like that. And so, yeah, it's like your own personal temperature regulating device. You don't have to fight with your family over, you know, the heat and the AC.
The Ember Wave is great. And I have temperature issues. I'm always finicky and crazy about it. I'm hard to deal with when it comes to temperatures. And the Ember Wave is great because it helps you, it gives you more options for how to deal with the fact that you're currently sweltering or the fact that it's like negative 10 degrees around you. And it gives you a source of warmth or cool. It does both somehow, magically. I'm pretty sure it's like definitely sorcery of some type.
There's a reason we're not in Texas.
It's at your fingers and whatever you need, it's there. And it can help you not have random hot flashes all the time or just dying
or freeze like me fingers. All the time.
Yeah, I'm always freezing. I don't really need the cool one that much. It's actually kind of handy right now when it is so weird and hot all of a sudden, but mostly I rely on the warmth part of it.
Well, I thank the three MIT scientists who invented it, and Emberwave won the pitch for AARP's Innovation and Aging Award. And you know, again, I got this from my father. It's perfect for it's actually a great device for folks who are older because they also have some trouble regulating temperature.
To receive $50 off your order, head to emberwave.com/45th. Again, that's emberwave.com/45th to receive $50 off your first order.
Okay, a couple of shocking. In France, they had some trials. They've halted the trials because of the kind of side effects they're seeing on heart, you know, like, I don't know what, but there are some really bad impacts on heart patients or anybody who has other kinds of issues. But I also read that there's some nursing homes where they're trying this drug, and in the nursing home, there's no signed consent being given for this. The families of the residents of these nursing homes have not been given notice that they're being given these drugs. It's like they're just human guinea pigs.
This is why it should never be politicized this way. Like, the scientific process cannot take place as it should now with this drug. It just can't.
At what point does Fauci and Birx, do they have to be like, this is...
Never. They'll never... They have committed firmly to whatever it takes. Writing this out is the way to best help the nation.
What about the briefings themselves? Do you think it's briefings. Time to just shut... Well, whatever. I mean, like, yeah. What do you want to call them? Pressers?
I think that it's propaganda. It's pure propaganda hour. I mean, they started off mostly that way, but there was still...
They go on for hours, too, by the way.
Yeah. It's nonsense. It shouldn't happen. In a democracy, it wouldn't happen. But whatever we are now is not pure democracy, because these things are just a chance for Trump to... this is like... We are worse off for having it because you cannot ask and get an answer from Trump. The reporters are just so unprepared for this. Like, at a minimum, they should be treating it like a cross-examination. I'm not even sure that would work with someone who is so willing to lie all the time about anything. But at a minimum, the questions have to be done in a cross-examination-like way. They can't just do this. We see that X has happened. What is the administration's just planned response to it? You don't get an answer. Trump is going to lie and claim that if there's a problem, it doesn't exist. He's going to say we've done everything great and perfect and wonderful and everyone agrees with me. He's going to say 24 million times, nobody even knew this could be a problem, or nobody even heard such a thing, or nobody ever even thought this would happen, which he says at least 20 times per briefing. It drives me crazy. Like, who wants a president for where everything in the world they think is something no one's ever heard of before?
Right.
And when Trump says nobody's heard of this or nobody thinks that, he means himself.
It's just him.
Nobody is always him.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the end result is we just have pure propaganda, totally divorced from the facts, with no sort of accountability or efforts to present the truth, just aired for 2 hours, and president gets to stand up there and be seen like refuting reporters. So in terms of TV watching, in terms of what viewers take home, it's a totally false message of Baghdad bombing the apocalypse.
It's also a very confusing message. I mean, if I wasn't independently doing my own research, and most people don't, and by the way, a lot of people maybe are not even watching these briefings, but they're still getting tidbits out of it. There's confusing messaging about this drug combination. There's confusing messaging about, you know, how seriously to take this, whether or not we should use masks, you know, all of these different things, whether or not stay-at-home orders should be in place. He's been asked over and over about why he doesn't put in a national stay-at-home order, and he won't do that. Because then he's very concerned about state rights. Suddenly he's like, oh, it's called federalism or something. I don't know. It just occurred to me, by the way, though, a few days ago, I think it was last weekend, so it must have been after we last recorded, Kushner popped up in one of these briefings. And we do know that he's been working behind the scenes, kind of overseeing the... It's just so fucking crazy. Overseeing, like, the coronavirus task force. Like, that's kind of what he's doing. And he did pop in for a bit, said some gobbledygook. And then we haven't seen him since.
But probably because he caused that issue when he was like, federal stockpiles are ours, not the state's.
Right.
And no one even asked Kushner about his brother's like company, Oscar, which is heavily involved in this response. I mean, all of it's nonsense. It's just...
What's his brother doing? I don't know.
His brother owns a healthcare company that's being getting contracts for the coronavirus response, which... You know, conflicts of interest like that don't matter anymore, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, what I did read was that Kushner is kind of in charge of, like, what the government is going to be buying and supplying. So all the contracts are probably going to come through him, be awarded through him in some way. And I'm guessing he, because he's total grift. I mean, I just watched the Dirty Money episode about, oh my God, about the Kushner family and the Kushner reels. You guys got to watch it if you haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. But with the drug combination, I'm guessing Kushner has a lot to do with that too.
One day we're going to find out that their building 666 in New York is going to reason they got $1 billion loan from Saudi. Yeah. They must have. It's the only thing that makes sense with the whole sequence of events from 2017.
Okay.
But anyway, point being, you know, these briefings, they're going to continue. They are, I guess, arguably newsworthy in some respect because it's the president saying something, but they aren't actually news. There is nothing, I can't remember the last time something factual came out of one of these. And by factual, I mean last time there was something that was conveyed, it was information that was real. Even the plans that are set at these briefings, like what they're going to do, what their plans are for what happens next, I can't remember the last time one of those plans actually happened too. Like, nothing in those briefings is real. Nothing about it is informative. There's no point in them existing other than as propaganda, which is why they'll continue.
I want to talk a little bit about, I think I have just been kind of horrified at the stories coming out about, and this should tell us exactly where we are in terms of this government being prepared. We're going to talk about that too. When did Trump know? When should this administration have started being prepared? But we know they haven't been, because what they're doing now is they're fucking pirating the supplies of other countries. Can we talk about that? I mean, that should tell us everything we need to know about whether or not we have the supplies we need.
It's not just other countries, though. They're also pirating supplies from the states.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So, I mean, we're still trying to figure out what's going... There's been a lot of good reporting lately about what's happening with that. But we do know that hospitals across the nation are ordering shipments of gear, testing, whatever. And the feds will seize it. They'll never get it delivered to them because the feds seize it and, like, somehow divert it somewhere else to the supply line. And we don't know how or why or what is going on with that.
Is the stuff that's being seized being added to the national stockpile? Do we have any idea what's happening?
Well, they can't be because the stockpile is basically 90% depleted at this point.
Did you say 90% depleted?
Yes, it is 90% depleted. There's very little left.
Whoa. Okay. I didn't know that. We have not peaked yet. Yeah. All right. So with some of the countries that are who are we beefing with? Who are we going to go to war with? I mean, I heard Germany.
All the countries are currently in conflict over this. I mean, that's to be expected in any scenario, any administration, that'd be happening. But it's definitely exacerbated by having Trump president of the United States. And the problem is that Trump is trying to stop all exports of all gear, which, again, but there are arguments in favor of that. But at the same time, that's going to result in retaliation, and those countries won't export to us, which can easily create the result that everyone's worse off than we would have been. So, like, just simply saying you can't have any exports ever is not a good solution, and it's what Trump is doing now. Meanwhile, Trump is, like, trying to call the countries calling favors from, like, yeah, like, last week we talked about Thailand, and they're like, give us all your stuff. Like, we're calling in favors from small countries that traditionally America would be seen as, like, the natural supporting partner, not the one who's begging for support.
Okay, so I wonder how these briefings are, by the way, are going to change, and if messaging is going to change, because Trump all of a sudden has a brand new communications team, like the whole team.
It's not going to affect anything.
It's not going to affect
it? No, the team's like only a name only. It doesn't matter. It's all relevant.
Yeah, you might be right. Although I feel like it's a turn for the worse when you've got Kaylee McEnany. I think that's how her last
name is. She's a figurehead. The last one ever to do a single briefing. She was not press secretary in any real sense of the word. And neither was Grisham
didn't. I don't know, and there's also a new director of strategic communications and a new senior communication advisor, but, I mean, does Trump take anybody's advice? I don't know. Anyhow, he's brought on these new folks, but he's also, we had a little Friday night massacre this past week. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so Inspector General Atkinson of the our intelligence agencies has been axed. He's the one, of course, who did his job, and alerted Congress to a whistleblower about Trump's attempts to blackmail/bribe Ukraine. Remember that whole thing that was a lifetime ago? Well, Trump didn't forget about it, so he's been quietly waiting. And in the midst of the pandemic, when no one has time to deal with his shit, he fires him for doing his job.
So when he's asked, and he's very open about why he's firing him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, he's like, I fired him because he did his job. I fired him because he turned over this report, the whistleblower report, to Congress. Let's listen to the audio of him responding to this question at a briefing yesterday. I think it was yesterday.
And why did you decide to turn?
I thought he did a terrible job. Absolutely terrible. He took a whistleblower report, which turned out to be a fake report. It was fake. It was totally wrong. It was about my conversation with the president of Ukraine. He took a fake report and he brought it to Congress. With an emergency, okay? Not a big Trump fan, that I can tell you. Instead of saying, and we offered this to him, no, we will take the conversation where fortunately we had a transcript. If we didn't have a transcript with the kind of deception and dishonesty that were practiced by the Democrats, I might not be standing here right now, okay? Fortunately, we had a transcript, and it was a perfect transcript because even the lieutenant colonel admitted it was correct. Okay, wait a minute. You asked a question. So he took this whistleblower, and I keep saying, where's the whistleblower, right? And why was the whistleblower allowed to do this? Why was he allowed to be, you call it fraudulent or incorrect transcript? So we offered this IG. I don't know him. I don't think I ever met him. He never even came in to see me. How can you do that without seeing the person? Never came in to see me, never requested to see me. He took this terrible, inaccurate whistleblower report, right? And he brought it to Congress. We offered to have him see my exact conversation. It was all about the conversation, by the way. That was the whole thing. It was about the conversation, right? And then after he saw it, he must have said, wow, because as I've said it many times, and it drives you people crazy, it was a perfect conversation. So instead of going and saying...
Now, Atkinson did not go quietly into the night entirely. I mean, he went kind of quietly, but he did release a statement, which is remarkable. And he stated, "It is hard not to think that the president's loss of confidence in me derives from my having faithfully discharged my legal obligations as an independent and impartial inspector general."
Now, interestingly enough, I think apparently Schiff is not going to let this go quietly. He's just announced that the House Intelligence Committee is going to be examining this firing. He wrote a letter, and he wrote a letter to the acting director of National Intelligence, Richard Grenell. And this is what's interesting about it. He says that, first in his letter, he says that Atkinson, quote, acted with the highest integrity and remarkable professionalism while he was repeatedly attacked by Trump. But here's what he says. He says he's asking Grenell to stipulate in writing that, quote, he will not permit retaliation or reprisals against anyone who has made or in the future makes protected disclosures of misconduct. He's not going to get it. But he's putting this out there. And if he's not going to get it, it's a very clever way of getting Grenell to admit that, yeah, we're going to be retaliating. What are you going to do about it? And I don't know if this is going to, basically morph into an actual investigation.
The thing is, Republicans have firmly signaled that they will do nothing to stop this. That they, they're obviously not all of them are in favor of it. A lot of them are, but plenty of them would rather it wasn't happening. But none of them are going to take action against it, which means Trump has no reason not to do it and every reason to do it. Without effective oversight, God knows what's going to happen next. But basically, Trump is totally unleashed.
He's unleashed
from now.
Let's talk about the other IG.
As a sign of the fact that Trump is not bound by anything, because Republicans will refuse to stop him no matter what he does. There's no level of corruption that would cause them to react negatively to him, or at least openly differ with him at this point. We now have another IG. This time, the one that was appointed to oversee $2 trillion in spending from the coronavirus stimulus recovery package.
My God.
And he, obviously he didn't think this up, but someone figured out that they reassigned him outside of where he was. He was not statutorily allowed to continue to be the head watchdog, head IG for the $2 trillion coronavirus package. So he's now gone, and he now has a loyalist who's installed, which is the goal, is to have loyalists who will not inspect and not do their jobs and in charge of every IG and every agency.
And there's nobody to oversee the IG.
The IG is supposed to be doing it, and the IG is going to be a Trump lackey. So at this point, oversight is effectively dead. And it's also dead because guess what? The House is hardly doing shit all. It's already announced its intention to do shit all, to do its own oversight, for whatever that's worth.
They're not even here. They're all on recess until the end of April, pretty much.
The most demoralizing part was when last week we had, for instance, House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn say that there is a new congressional panel that's going to oversee distribution of coronavirus relief funds and deal with all that. But he said, it will be forward-looking and they will not probe anything that happened in the past with Trump's response. Clyburn said, quote, "We're not going to be looking back at what the president may or may not have done back before the crisis hit. The crisis is with us." And then Pelosi has also doubled down on that and said that the committee's focus is going to be the here and now. And they're not going to be taking on any sort of oversight or past action review like akin to the 9/11 commission. So they're basically...
It's just because we're just too close to an election and they're like, it's just not worth... our energy has to be focused somewhere else.
Pelosi got some poll numbers that she decided meant that no one really likes oversight or blame or investigation, so it's time to move past that. But, it's terrible politics. It's horrendous politics because Trump has his two-hour daily propaganda airing to just say all these lies about things that did not happen, that and the reality is not what it is. And then there's no voice from the other side. There's no voice from the Democrats going here's what definitely is reality. Here's what definitely happened. Here are the problems that went on. Here are all the screw-ups that existed. But aside from politics, it is a disaster in governance because this will not be the last pandemic. We need to know what went wrong. We need to know what happened. There's no response that could have happened that would have been perfect. This was a novel situation. It is inevitable that there were missteps along the way. Even in the best response that ever happened, if it had happened, which it did not, there would have been issues that we need to know and figure out. We need to know what led to the worsening of the crisis and how can we stop that in the future. It's not just about politics. We need to know what happened for the future.
But does that really require a real investigation inquiry? I feel like everybody knows. We all know.
We don't. We have no idea the details of it. We know things were fucked up, but we didn't know. We don't know, for instance, who made the calls that caused it. We don't know why those calls were made. We don't know where the errors were that led to the alarm not going up in time. for instance, what like it does is starting to seem like their intel agencies were not to blame at all, that there was, in fact, a robust intelligence understanding of the threat ahead of us. And
I knew it.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, that did not translate into action. But say that it could be or could have been the problem was the intel, in which case we need to focus on why we didn't learn in time what the issue was. If instead the problem is that we didn't know what the problem was and then didn't respond, well, that's a whole different issue to address. So
we have a fucking idiot in charge.
And we have fucking Democrats as the opposition. So
right. So those are two IGs, but there has been reports that he does not like any kind of oversight. So there's reports that he's going to cut like a bunch more out.
That was last night. There was like, it was pretty thinly sourced. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but, yeah, there's reports that he has seven more inspector generals he's planning to replace with lackeys.
He's basically looking for anybody appointed by President Obama and getting rid of them.
Or appointed by anyone who's, it's not even just Obama. It's he likes to, call him Obama holdovers, but it's not just about that. It's about anyone who is dedicated to the government or is a civil servant in the traditional understanding of the term. He wants only Trump loyalists, not just Trump appointees. He wants Trump loyalists. A lot of these IGs are, like, I didn't say most of them are going to be his appoint. Well, a lot of them will be his appointees, people who are appointed under his administration, but they were not Trump loyalists. So he needs them gone now that he has more control over everything. But as a sign of like why the Democrats' not looking back strategy is so terrible, Trump tweeted this morning, "Once we open up our great country," all caps, "and it will be sooner rather than later,
I saw this.
Horror of the invisible enemy, except for those that sadly lost a family member or a friend, must quickly be forgotten. Our economy will boom, perhaps like never before." 3 exclamation marks. Which... that's fucking insane. It's like, don't look at the crimes I did. We're just going to move forward. Like, what the hell? Like, that's an insane position to take openly, and it's a sane position for the Democrats to be agreeing with. And also, it's an insane sentiment to express in general. Like, we must forget all of these tens of thousands dead. Okay, those of you who lost friends and family, you don't have to forget, but everyone else has to forget instantly. Like, what the fuck?
Maybe they'll revisit it. Maybe the Democrats will say, listen, when this time passes, they're going to say, now that we've crossed the bridge, like the worst is over. Now we need to look back and figure this out. So just we know what to do next time and to create another playbook the way the Obama administration did that they didn't look at or use. So maybe that's just something right now they're signaling as a message versus something that they're not going to take seriously at all. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, even if the Democrats didn't want to do it, let's say we have a Democratic administration next year, you know, there's going to be cabinet positions in which they're going to make this a priority, whether it's at Health and Human Services or Homeland Security and other agencies are going to say, we have to have a task force that looks back and tries to figure out what happened, where the problems were. I mean, this happens all the time. It happened after 9/11. It happens all the time.
Yeah, but so, unless the Democrats are lying, which I would not count on that hope, their plan is not to do that.
Yeah, maybe they are counting on a new administration to take that up. We talked about this letter that the commander of the USS Theodore Roosevelt had written. It wasn't a letter. Let's be clear. It was not a letter. He had written a memo because he was desperate to get help for naval officers and servicemen on his ship. It was stuck out where in Guam or somewhere, or I don't know where it was, but you know, they couldn't do anything. There were people on board that had the virus and they couldn't get them out, and he couldn't get anybody to respond. So he wrote a memo to his superiors. The memo got leaked. He got fired last week, and there's footage of as he was leaving the ship, he was being cheered by thousands, if not tens of thousands of servicemen cheering him on as he left. He was very highly respected. Then the acting Navy Secretary Thomas Modley apparently gave a talk to the crew and called Crozier too stupid to be in charge, which...
Well, to be fair, that wasn't actually what he said. That's kind of portrayed that way. And he's the one thing I'll agree with him on is that that sentence was out of context. What he said was that It was basically, if Crozier thought that this wouldn't be what happened as a result of writing that memo, he is too stupid or naive to be in charge. But he's not that stupid or naive, so he did it deliberately, so it's a question of misjudgment for intentionally causing a leak. So he wasn't actually calling him stupid or naive.
Here's my question. Yeah. If he's written a memo to his seniors, what else is he supposed to do? If he's tried other methods, what would have been the appropriate way for him to ask for this help?
So what seems to have happened is that, I mean, Motley was right. What Crozier did, he knew what he was doing. He probably knew he was likely sacrificing his career. At the very least, he knew he was risking it. And he did go out of the normal chain of command. He did take actions that substantially increased the odds of a leak and more attention. All that is true. So it is fair to say he made a deliberate choice to take this strategy. The question is why he did it, and we don't know yet. And I mean, but reading between, well, not even between the lines, but looking at what the memo said, looking at the response from Motley and Trump and others, it seems that what happened was that after the Theodore Roosevelt, the ship, the aircraft carrier, made a pre-planned stop at Vietnam early March, this infection began on the ship because sailors went ashore and came back and brought it with them. And when they got to Guam, the infection was clearly out of control. It became very apparent that they were not going to stop the infection without severe measures that would disrupt the Theodore Roosevelt's operations and would temporarily take it out of potential fighting range. I.e., they had to take almost everyone off the ship, leave a skeleton crew to keep it running and clean it up, and have everyone go through quarantine and then get back on. That was the only way to stop it from spreading through the ship. And it seems like the Navy said, you can't do that. We cannot have the ship out of position. We can't take it offline. We can't risk showing weakness. We have to continue on, even with the infection. Which will end up, like, that would necessarily end up in sailors dying. They had 5,000 almost people on the ship. If you have the infection running rampant, mathematically, yes, probably quite a few sailors were going to die. So what Crozier seems to have done is to have decided that he couldn't live with that outcome. He could not continue to command the ship into that result. So he wrote the memo and said, look, we're not in war. We are in peacetime. We cannot condemn sailors to die. We must take action to save them. And he must have known it would be leaked. I think that's probably true. Which, again, whether that was the right call, the wrong call, depends on what you think his ultimate duty was. And he saw his ultimate duty to be to saving his men's life from dying unnecessarily.
Okay, so what I found interesting was kind of what happened after that. Once that memo was leaked, Trump had some pretty tough words for Crozier. Then what Motley said came out. Motley resigns, and then Trump, well, he didn't resign yet. So Trump, at a briefing, kind of seemed to backpedal a bit. And let's listen to what he had to say about Crozier and Motley when he was asked what he thought about what Motley said to the men.
Speaking of unfair, go ahead.
Mr. President, the acting secretary of the Navy told the crew of the USS Roosevelt that Captain Crozier was either, quote, too naive or too stupid to be in command. Is it appropriate for the chief officer of the Navy to be speaking this way about this captain? Is this
well, I haven't heard it exactly. I haven't heard. I heard they had a statement that was made, if that were the statement. It's a strong statement. Look, the letters shouldn't have been sent, and certainly they shouldn't have been leaked. This is a military operation. I must tell you, I've heard very good things about the gentlemen, both gentlemen, by the way. I will say this about both gentlemen. And I may look into it only from the standpoint that something should be resolved, because I'm hearing good things about both people.
Look into, sir?
I may just get involved, if it's okay with you.
What do you mean?
Yeah, because you know what? You have two good people, and they're arguing. And I'm good, believe it or not, at settling arguments. I'm good at settling these arguments. So I may look into it in detail, and I'll be able to figure it out very fast. But that was a statement. It's a rough statement. But look, letters should not have been sent to many people, unclassified. That was a mistake. It's a mistake that shouldn't have been made, because it's unfair to the families of the people on the ship, because they get nervous. And it shows weakness.
And there's nothing weak about us now. Not anymore. We have the strongest military we've ever had. And we're not going to be showing weakness to anybody because we have — that ship is incredible, nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. And we don't want to be doing — writing letters. We don't want to have letter-writing campaigns where the fake news finds a letter or gets a leak. We don't want that. So the letter — excuse me. So the letter shouldn't have been sent. With all of that said, his career prior to that was very good. So I'm going to get involved and see exactly what's going on there because I don't want to destroy somebody for having a bad day.
Does it seem to you like he backpedaled? I wonder if it was because he saw the video.
This is the most Trumpian Trump thing ever. It's the one thing Trump is really good. The one skill Trump has and that he is truly a genius at, the one thing he excels above all others is convincing people to sacrifice their dignity and integrity for him. For nothing. Well, he loves doing this move where he convinces someone to sacrifice their dignity and then immediately undercut them and make them look like the biggest idiots on earth, like with Motley. Now, Motley's only acting Secretary of the Navy because...
Well, Motley got fired after
Yeah, but
Trump
he only
this,
had
right?
the job in the first
resigned,
place.
Resigned, excuse me. Yeah.
Because the last one got fired after he tried to intervene and stop Trump from taking the war criminal SEAL who murdered
right.
civilians back into it. He lost a job for that. So this guy comes in, Motley, and he sees this letter leak. And he tries to think ahead. He's like, oh, Trump wants me to fire that guy. I don't want the Navy to be undermined by having Trump involved directly, so I'm going to avoid the need for Trump to be directly involved and take it into my hands to do this myself. So he takes all the brunt of the heat of this, takes on all the drama. And then he doubles down by flying to Guam, getting on the ship, and making an unhinged 15-minute speech that was like basically trying to be Trump. Like he it was fully Trumpian. He accused the media of being trying to take down Trump, so the sailors should never deal with the media because the media is determined to destroy their commander-in-chief. It was just nuts. And at that point, that's when Trump weighs in. Because guess what? Trump got everything he wanted. And he didn't have to be the bad guy.
But so, here's the thing. I'll tell you what. I totally understand what you're saying in terms of how Trump loves to humiliate those who even stand up for him. But also, this guy is somebody who stood up for Trump. And so I'm just surprised that Trump then got, you know, forced him to resign. Because this is your Trump loyalist right here. If anything, he does double and triple down. So I thought he would continue to make Crozier the bad guy, be like, look, Motley did the right thing.
When have loyalists done well under Trump? He sometimes suggests he might do favors for
them.
When
they question him a little bit, challenge him a tiny bit.
I mean, look, guess who never challenged Trump? Guess who did everything Trump wanted? Guess who's still doing everything Trump wanted? Paul Manafort. And where's Paul Manafort? Probably going to die in prison. And Trump's done nothing so far. He might one day pardon him.
No,
but so
will.
Far, there's been no proof he's going to do anything to reward Manafort's loyalty. Or Flynn's, for that matter, although he's done more for Flynn. Point being, and Roger Stone's like an old friend, so maybe he has a little more leeway. But Trump, being loyalist to Trump doesn't mean shit to Trump.
Well, he doesn't have that many. So, I mean, I would think he, in terms of in his government, so I would think he wouldn't be getting rid of him left and right.
He's bringing them all back. That's why Hope Hicks is back.
That's right. What is she doing? What's her role?
I don't even know.
Okay. All right. So now there's also been a lot of reporting around... the timeline here, and you mentioned earlier the intelligence community and how we've recently learned that they were warning Trump. What when was it, like back in December, early January?
November.
November.
We
okay.
now know that analysts concluded in November of 2019 that this novel coronavirus could be a quote cataclysmic event, and that multiple times in November, the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, the Pentagon's Joint staff and the White House were all briefed on this. And at a minimum, after briefings from November to December, by early January, it was featured in the presidential daily briefing given to Trump, assuming he showed up for the briefing that day or not, who knows. Point being, there were a lot of warning signs and a lot of alarms going off. This wasn't missed. This was not something that we came out of nowhere and that no one really was worried about. And like part of the reason no one reacted in time in the United States, the reason there was such complacency is that had there been a real threat, there should have been all these alarms going off. There should have been reactions from multiple agencies. There should have been warning signs. There should have been an indication from the federal government as a whole that this threat was real and there was a plausible chance of severe effects in the United States. And none of those alarms were going off, at least publicly. As far as we could see, there was nothing going off like it should have been. And we now know that the warnings were being sent off internally. They just never got translated.
But even internally, I think it was kind of limited. The kind of interagency cooperation, and these kinds of failings happen all the time. They are the kinds of things that led to 9/11, by the way. But the interagency communications, I mean, you've got to have a team that's going to do that kind of stuff. The pandemic response team is gone. I mean, like, so many positions. I was reading today a report where in DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, only 35% of the positions are filled, like in leadership. So it's like, so there's so many empty spots in government that it's just vacuums. I'm sure even internally, it just, agencies didn't even hear about this.
That is all true and definitely a factor, but it does suggest from reporting I've seen that this one was not missed. It was known, and given limitations they had and the infrastructure losses that they had, they still detected the threat, went through all the normal procedures. They sent the alert up. They kept briefing it. They kept alerting. End of the day, it doesn't matter who was in government. It doesn't matter who was there if the president decides not to respond. Like, right. There's nothing that can be done at that point. If the president is making a call that our response is not going to be to take this seriously or to alert everyone to the fact that the danger is here, there's nothing they could do. That's not the intel agency's job.
I mean, he's already given his response to this, and so have other GOP talking. And that's like, oh, yeah, because the impeachment. He was busy with the impeachment. He was distracted by the Dems. They didn't let him, even though he didn't participate in any way at all.
He had nothing he had to do with relation to the impeachment. That was all his attorneys. He did nothing himself.
He basically golfed through the impeachment. But
I think we're going to find out that what happened was the president made a call, because he's a science denialist and he's a bullshitter and he believes in hope and he just survived his entire life by just making do and getting by. He did not want to risk his perfect, beautiful stock market by taking precautions. So he gambled everything on this not being real and on the possibility that once it got warmer, it would disappear and that somehow, amazingly, the United States would be spared until it got warmer. And I think we'll find out it was a deliberate choice that he made to not cause alarm by not taking the actions that were necessary if this turned out to be bad. And he lost the gamble. So what?
Do you remember not long ago when Eric Trump tweeted about, this is the perfect time to be investing, I'm such a genius.
He was like, I would be all in. Like, oh, so to clarify, you are not saying you are all in. You're saying you would be, hypothetically, if you were following your own advice, which you are not.
I kind of wonder if he, like others close to Trump, already knew the shit show was coming, and he's trying to get people to bolster the market by investing, by sending out a tweet like that.
Had to have been. There's no way Trump did not alert his company to the fact that there's going to be a massive event that's going to affect travel more than any other industry.
That's
all for this week. And right. Good luck, New York.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. That's kind of heartbreaking hearing you say it like that. Yeah. Well, good luck to everybody. And stay home. Stay safe. Thank you guys for tuning in. And Susan, you be well. And we'll be back in 7 days.
See y'all next week.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.